Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Stories Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yes, now this time we're going, it's Dance Hall of the Dead by Tony Hillerman, which is part of his, I have no idea how many books are in the series, maybe you do.
18 by him.
Book series. This is book two. It's called A Leaphorn and Chi novel. And those names are two characters. And we don't see much of Chi in this one.
We see none of Chi. I think Chi, so Joe Leaphorn is an older, middle-aged, more experienced policeman, Navajo policeman on the Navajo reservation. And his point of view is for the first three books. And then the fourth book, People of Darkness, he's not in it, and Jim Chi is introduced, and he's a younger policeman, and he's been in the world enough. I think he was in the Marines, and he's done other things, but Tony Hillerman said he introduced him because Joe Leaphorn would have understood too soon all the clues to the mystery.
Oh, wow.
He needed somebody who was less experienced and thought more like a traditional Navajo.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And didn't see how the pieces all went together quite as quickly. And he's a very appealing character, just like Joe Leaphorn.
Very good.
Very logical, all the things, you know.
So do you know about the show Dark Winds?
I've seen it mentioned numerous times in people reviewing this book, and I have not watched it. Have you watched it?
I watched, I believe, the first two seasons. I think there's four out.
Okay.
Zach, I think his name is Zach McLarnon, is Joe Leaphorn, and he's great. He is great. I really love watching him. So
they sound like they're fairly close to the books. I mean,
I think so. They're based on these books, right?
Yeah, exactly, because I think in one of the reviews for not this book, but People of Darkness, someone was going, season whatever was based on this book.
Yeah, and so, I looked up the same thing because I was wondering if this book, because it was book two, I was wondering, is this one of the seasons? And it was not. But it's like, it's either season, I think it might be season three and four have elements of it.
Oh,
and it's like
okay.
they're mashing together several books, you know. There's something of this book in those.
Okay.
So that's what I read anyway. And I haven't seen three or four yet.
Did you find that what they did had kind of the feel of the Dance Hall of the Dead sort of a book? Or
yeah, I think so. Because
it was translated pretty well.
There was just a little bit of supernatural I'm picturing there was this female Navajo police officer, and there was a witch, and there was a dark feeling, you know, and they were kind of conveying of this feeling that she was having and being shunned by the witch, you know what I mean? So there was that just a tiny supernatural element. But then, murders and solving the murder and all that stuff,
And I think that later on, and maybe nobody cares about this, but I think that later on, Tony Hillerman does introduce a young woman, Bernadette Manuelito.
Yeah, and she's in the show.
Okay,
so she's a police officer, right?
Right.
Right, so she works with Joe Leaphorn, and In the show, I think Jim Chi came in from the FBI or something.
He wants to be in the FBI in the book I'm reading now.
So maybe he's on his way to the FBI or something. I remember the FBI was there because he had conversations with a guy from the FBI, and it was clear that he kind of wanted to be that, but he was torn between the Navajo way and the white guy way.
Yeah, he wanted to be, and then we'll talk about the book, but he wanted to be a singer, and his uncle, maybe, who was going to teach him to be a singer, said, first you must go understand the white people better. Then you come back here and I'll train you to be a singer. So he's being a Navajo policeman. And yeah, in later books, I think both of these guys are somehow together. And then it looked like, just very cursory look, it was like book 15, mm-hmm. where Bernadette Manuelito gets introduced. So, yeah. you know, it's interesting to read these, because we picked it up, just to go back to specifically Dance Hall of the Dead. And I said this at the end of the last episode, but for those who didn't hear that or pay attention, I can't imagine that. But anyway, my husband and I last year went to Palo Duro Canyon, which is in Texas. And while we were, I mean, it's just an amazing place and it's so beautiful. And, but while we were at the, I don't know, the little park guest thing, there were a zillion Tony Hillerman books. And I looked and I was like, oh, wrong Indians. But of course, what else do you have?
Yeah.
And at that point, I was like, you know, I remember reading these when they came out, because the first one, this was published in 73. The first one with Blessing Way was published in 70. And then it's every few years, he's publishing another one. So I was reading these mysteries when they came out and enjoying them, but I never reread them. So I was like, oh, I think I remember Dance Hall of the Dead as being really good. So we got it on Audible and we listened to it as we drove from Palo Duro down to Alpine, which is near Big Bend. And it's kind of imprinted on me as part of that trip.
Oh, isn't that neat how that happens?
Yes. And so because of the audio, you know, I have these visuals that are connected to the book, even though they're not really, of course, connected to what's going on in the book. But as I was reading it, I said, I might have to buy the book because it is such a keepsake to me of that trip.
Mm, love that.
Which was, yeah. And so, and because when I came back, I said, oh, I enjoyed this so much, I'm going to get the next book from the library. And I got it as a print book and I went, I don't know. And but after listening to this again recently, I said, let me try the audiobook.
Hmm.
Well, the audiobook is magical to me in a way that reading the books isn't, at least the first time around. And there are all these wonderful elements in it that other mysteries don't necessarily have. So I've just kept going.
Oh, neat. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. George Goodall reads the audio. Yeah.
Oh, he's so good.
So very. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
absolutely. And he... I can't remember if I told you that we met Craig Johnson, and I know, I don't think he's a favorite of yours, but he writes similar, he's in similar territory.
Okay.
Craig Johnson writes the Longmire books.
Oh.
Right.
I would probably like him, and maybe I need to listen to those books now that I think about it.
One of the things, so he was at our local library because he, he had some event at the Utah State University. And then he said whenever he does something like that, he loves to find the library and set up an event at the library, and which is
neat.
It was fantastic. So we went and met him. He's one of my wife's favorites. She's read almost all of them. I've read about four of them, and I really do like them. But anyway, he talked about Tony Hillerman is who got George Goodall to read his books.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
that's so cool.
So they knew each other. And because I guess, you know, he said, you know, somebody actually asked him the question, how do you know, I mean, how do you get to meet these people? He says they're events. You know, you go to some event, something, and they match Tony Hillerman with Craig Johnson and a few other authors or whatever at some convention somewhere. And they end up more than once meeting each other and talking, and because they're in the same space, you know, they're writing similar things. Anyway, but apparently he seemed like he was fairly close with him, Tony Hillerman.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and he probably would be excellent at that just because, I mean, he has such an easy voice to listen to. And for these books, which are fairly slow and meditative seeming a lot of the time because we're seeing it through Joe Leaphorn's eyes and he's a very methodical guy, calm seeming guy, it really fits. And, even though there's a surprising action element pretty far into the book, it still works.
Very much.
So I'm going to have to look for the audiobook for the Longmire thing. So I'm glad you mentioned that.
Check out the Longmire. Yeah, I'm trying to remember what the first one's called. The Cold Dish. That's what it's called.
Okay.
The Cold Dish. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But they're fun. They're fairly short, you know. And again, he's probably up to about 17 as well. He's got a bunch. And his latest one is really highly regarded. People love it. Yeah.
Okay.
Can't remember the name of it, but.
And there are certain authors who I don't care for reading their books. And we read by L.S. Peters, the Brother Cadfael book.
I've read one of those.
Well, yeah. And I, right. That's why we talked about it. Mm-hmm. And I tried several times going, well, now I'm used to listening to them. I'll just pick one up and read it. Nope. Did not work for me. But if I listened to it, it was great.
It was fun. That's great.
Some I can go back and forth on and some I can't. I mean, in terms of like different authors that way.
So, yeah. Well, good.
I'm fine just listening to Tony Hillerman and maybe rereading something later.
Mm-hmm.
So this book, it's the second one. The first one is pretty good, but it's not really, it's from somebody else's point of view, really. It's from, I don't know, an archaeologist or somebody who's caught up in this terrible adventure, and Joe Leaphorn comes to the very end and solves it and saves them and all this stuff. Mm. This to me is the first true Tony Hillerman book that really takes him in the direction he's going to go in.
That's great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so he's brought in from the Navajo tribal police to look with the Zuni police for two missing boys. One boy has been found after a couple of days, and he's not alive, and they don't know what involvement the other boy had. So the boy is dead, but they don't know about George Bowlegs, who's the Navajo boy, and they were close friends, and that's not common across tribal boundaries, because the way the people think is often very different. And in fact, we see this reflected some in the way Joe Leaphorn has to really keep an eye on himself to not downplay or disregard what the Zuni say, because he had an experience with a college roommate who left him feeling like he couldn't really trust the Zunis that much.
Mm.
And so that's kind of interesting too, as those thoughts are going through his head. And at the same time as they're investigating, they're going to other sets of people who are also on the reservation, who George may have had contact with. So you're seeing a group of hippies. Hmm. You're seeing an archaeological dig. And so you've got all these people interacting in this space that is really home to
and you're seeing the Zunis and the Hopis and as well. The
Navajos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so one of the things that interested me, besides the fact that I just enjoyed the setting so much, was, and Joe Leaphorn, was the fact that you get a lot of insight into the people's religion, or at least one aspect of it, and to the Navajo way of looking at the world.
Yeah, and it's remarkable how different they are. Similar, but different at the same time.
Right. And then so that interested me, because then I discovered, as I tried the next book, this is one of Tony Hillerman's hallmarks, is he kind of writes the books because he wants to explain to people how some of this stuff is thought of by the native people. And so a lot of every book that I've listened to, and it's only, you know, three so far, they're all kind of looking at, oh, let me explain this to you, or let me see, oh, I don't understand white people because here's how we think of it, that kind of thing. And so you're getting all these insights, and it's really kind of beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So I like the way the whole package went.
I thought it was a really good book.
I will say the only thing that I didn't like about it, and I'm kind of used to this, this happened to me with the Brother Cadfael books. To me, the mystery was no mystery. I knew by page four probably what started it. And by page like maybe page 70 or 38, I knew why.
Okay. I did not.
I didn't know. Yeah, I didn't. Well, and I had read it, but it had been, you know, in 1973, but I've read so many mysteries that I went, these people, I don't think these people were here for any other reason than to describe some of these things, and therefore
that is involved. The thing about a mystery, isn't it? You know, unless it's really well written, there are some characters that are like, why are they actually here? Oh, they're here because they killed somebody. That's why they're here. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. Or why did you tell me these two details about this person who I'm not going to meet again until much further in the book and all that kind of thing? And he gets better at it as Hillerman gets a little more complex in his mystery telling by this third book I've read. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of it. I was like, I know exactly what this stuff is, but there was an element that I hadn't expected. So I was like, oh, good. you know. But I like the rest of it so much, I didn't care if I
Yeah, and that's the thing to me with mystery books. I don't know if I, you know, I never stop a mystery book and say, who did this? You know, that's not what my brain is doing. Mm-hmm. I'm enjoying, mm-hmm. usually it's the setting, you know, like you mentioned the Ellis Peters. You're reading it and you're actually learning about this setting and the people in the mm-hmm. setting and what they're like and things. So I don't know, I may be atypical, but it's like I'm not trying very hard to solve it. But if a clue leaps out, then I'll say, oh, I think this is what happened. You know, I may think that. But I don't try to figure it out, usually.
Yeah, and it's funny because I don't sit there and try to go, and this clue and that clue. But as I'm going, I'm always it's kind of like reading The Feast. You remember when we read that and you knew seven people died, but you didn't know who.
Right.
So the whole way through the book, I was like, oh, it's probably not you. Well, I hope it's you. So I'm always kind of engaged at some point with the solution, but I'm not sitting there methodically going, and I have to figure it out.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm. Sure.
And it does depend on the kind of mystery because when you think about Agatha Christie, she's not telling you anything about a bunch of people you don't know about generally. I mean, it's a British household. It's a whatever. There's definitely the puzzle is more the point than getting to know the people.
Yeah.
Is. And there's a lot going on. Her mysteries have a lot of working parts that really go together well. And Tony Hillerman, as I say, that part of it to me is improving as his books go on. But the rest of it works so well. And my husband didn't know what happened. He couldn't figure it out either.
Okay.
So it didn't matter. I mean, I may have read so many mysteries that this one was just simple.
Yeah,
it
just sticks out to you. Yeah. That's neat.
Yeah.
That's neat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, very good. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, you nailed it and I enjoyed it too. So thanks for that. Yeah. But, but yeah, I'd love to get into some spoilers.
Okay.
Let's do that.
All right.
I love it. So, yeah, Leaphorn. And by the way, that guy's name is Zahn, not Zach. I think I said Zach. The actor. Zahn McLernan.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
The actor who plays Joe Leaphorn. I just wanted to correct that because I looked it up while we were talking. So,
okay.
But, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, religion permeates this book. It's like everything that's happening is because of that. Because of some beliefs and, you know, we end up, you know, when we finally find out who the killer is, I don't know, I can hold on to that for a minute if you want.
Yeah, do it.
Okay, yeah, well, this guy that's doing the dig is actually salting the dig, which I can't imagine how horrible that is, you know what it's like. This is a scientist who's doing a dig and he wants a certain result, so he's planting stuff. That's what salting is. He's planting stuff, and he's got a little kind of a partner who's actually doing the digging, who he's
innocent
of
this.
Totally innocent of it, but he's like, you know, I can't think of, I mean, it's heinous, right? And
well, also he's furious. So when they're talking about it, and this was the second clue where I was like, they say Reynolds was ready to kill somebody. He's not used to that kind of treatment. He's not the kind of man you push on. They said he told some of his friends there that he'd make these people accept his theory if it took the rest of his life. And so his theory is about the kind of prehistoric man that was living in this area and why he seemed to suddenly disappear. And so he came up with this theory and no one would believe it. But this guy didn't have enough proof for it. So he's going to manufacture the proof just to make them eat their words. And that's when I went, oh.
There you go.
Whatever happened, the way it happened, he did it. And before they said that they were pushed off, Shorty and, or George, sorry.
Yeah.
George and, what's the other boy's name?
The boy, right, the original boy, Ernesto?
Yeah, Ernesto. Uh-huh. So they say that George and Ernesto were pushed away from the rig because George was looking around for beads and arrowheads in the doctor's box of stuff. Well, I saw this, and then I saw the second thing, and I went, oh.
Yeah, there you go.
He's fixing it, and he took something, and that's why he's not killing them right away, because he wants to know where the things that got taken.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
But the thing is that this guy, his religion is proving himself right and not being laughed at.
Hmm.
that's what drives him for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And
his own beliefs is a religion. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
And the various white people you run into, like the hippies are fairly aimless. There's poor Suzanne who just wants to help people, but the hippies are no good, most of them. But Isaacs, who's the assistant, he is driven by making a name for himself because he was so poor when he grew up. Mm. He doesn't feel worthy of anything until he's overcome that poverty. Mm. So that's not necessarily a religion, but he's driven in the same way Reynolds was, to prove himself in this way.
Very good.
Right?
Yep, very good.
And then you have everybody else, when you see what Joe Leaphorn is thinking and the people they're talking to who are the native people, they are so often, everything they do kind of stems from the basic beliefs they have in how the world works and how it's put together.
Yeah, it is fascinating, the beliefs. And interestingly enough, one of the people that explains those beliefs is this Catholic priest.
I loved it.
I really like that guy. You know, he speaks Navajo. He cares quite a bit. The fact that he's looked into this and learned this was really cool. And, I thought that was impressive stuff. And he was explaining to Leaphorn, who is Navajo. It was interesting that Leaphorn had, these big holes in, what the Zunis believe.
Right.
Even though they live close.
Well, and they also think, or they even just live so differently. So at one point, Joe Leaphorn's talking about have all this land, but they all choose, most of them choose to live in this one city. Mm. It's kind of like a beehive.
Yeah.
They're just all together all the time. Mm-hmm. And he goes, and then the Navajos have their hogans and they live kind of far apart from each other.
Yeah, really spread out. Yeah.
And at one point somebody says, I think George was lonely. And I think he was lonely. And it says, if you're a Navajo, being lonely must be terrible because, they don't group together.
Like all grouped together, right. And George was looking for a religion. It was like he was trying to figure it out.
And a community.
And a community, right. So he was, and he was talking to the priest about it. And the priest was giving him information. And I think he even said that George helped him serve mass sometimes. So it was like George Ernesto did, okay.
Ernesto was Catholic. Okay. George wasn't.
Okay.
And he said before he got all in on Catholicism, he got really interested in the Zuni. The thing I thought was interesting where he said he was looking so hard at all these religions, and he goes, if we'd have gotten them, someday we might have had a St. Bowlegs of Zuni, a St. Bowlegs of the Navajo, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't, because they're like, he's the kind of crazy seeker that turns into a saint.
Mm.
Very
nice.
If he's all in.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
And I thought that was really great because he was doing something that nobody thought is he said he wanted to become a Zuni. And no one understood that because they're like, no, you have to be born into this. But his friend Ernesto, who was Zuni, was telling him some stuff about it. And then he started worrying because he said, oh my gosh, a lot of our religion is very secret societies and all this kind of thing. And maybe I've done something really bad in sharing this bit of information. And then after he gets killed or around that time, is when George disappears, and anytime he surfaces, he's asking questions about what do you have to do for forgiveness?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
So he's all motivated by this. Right.
Yep. Yeah. He's all motivated by this. And I remember it was a very powerful moment when Leaphorn is figuring this out. And then he realizes that George is in danger because of sacrilege, right? Mm-hmm. And that's like the piece that fits all in. And the Zuni are saying, well, if you do this thing, we can't have you alive anymore. So he sprints to find George finally, and he finally finds him, but just too late.
Well, but of course, they weren't going to do anything to George.
Right, and they didn't.
The Zuni, it's whoever's killed Ernesto and has been stalking George,
right.
And no one understood why. And of course, the thing I was saying before about, or that we were saying about the salting, the guy was determined to get these things back so he could go on with his plan. So,
yeah.
Even if it meant killing two kids. So he's this kids. Dude,
yeah. I mean, he's trying to do this dig and everything, this Reynolds guy. And he cares nothing about the sacredness of stuff. But anyway, I thought it was really powerful. He kills George and is immediately pulled into a doorway.
I and know.
And is never seen again, right? And Leaphorn chooses not to pursue that at all. Yeah. And he's like, I'm fine with it.
Yeah. Well, because they're talking about it. He and Pasquanti, who I believe is the Zuni policeman.
Yep.
And so they're talking about this means, because a Kachina, if I'm saying it right, has been seen around near where these boys were. And that's the Zunis wear these masks representing the gods. And the Kachina, the real Kachina masks, house a Kachina spirit.
Mm.
And then they said, well, what about this thing? And they're like, I know where these two masks are kept, and nobody would have ever used it or told where it was.
Mm.
Or I know these families, you know, he goes, it would never have happened. And he said, do you think somebody might have taken a mask and changed it, a different kind of a mask? And he's, well, I don't think a Zuni would take the mask of his family and look at it like this. And it says, the two men looked at each other silently. Mm. What Leaphorn described had been a hideous desecration. Worst, it had happened in the most holy period of the Zuni liturgical year, in the days of the sacred retreat just before Shalako. If the ceremonial was not properly done, rain did not fall, crops did not sprout, and sickness and bad luck were loosened across the land. And so they're talking about, this is probably a person who stole this and did it. And we will watch for that man, Pasquanti said.
Yeah.
His voice was grim. It caused Leaphorn to remember something that Rounder had told him years ago. Rounder was his roommate. In Zuni mythology, the penalty for sacrilege is death.
Hmm.
And so that's why he lets it go. Because first of all, this guy has killed two people anyway. And second of all, the penalty for sacrilege is death. And he can respect that.
Right, right. Yeah, powerful. That was a powerful scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then this conversation with Isaacs was also super good.
Mm-hmm.
So Leaphorn goes to the assistant of Reynolds and lays it out for him and basically says, you know, you get to choose now how important your career is to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, make the right choice. And he leaves. Pretty much, right?
Well, yeah, because there was that girl when I was saying poor, I'm pretty sure her name was Suzanne.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right.
Yeah, yep. Who she and Isaacs were really attracted to each other. Both of them were down on their luck. And when Reynolds found out she was hanging around, he's like, oh, no, she'll find out. So he told Isaac, you're not taking this seriously. Get rid of her. So Isaacs chooses career possibility over this girl. And this is when Joe Leaphorn's finding this out, going, I just will never understand white men. I just don't get it. But okay. Mm. So at that point, though, later, Isaacs is offered an opportunity to help hide her and protect her when things are going really wrong at the hippie place and all this stuff. And he turns it down. And Joe Leaphorn's like, oh, brother, okay, I give up on you.
Mm.
And then later he tells him this, and it's kind of like, okay, so now you know that your mentor murdered two kids, did all this stuff, fooled you. What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to get Suzanne and live the life you should live? He says, a couple days ago, you wanted this job worse than you wanted that girl of yours. How about now?
Mm.
You want it bad enough to lie a little? I'm saying nobody's going to guess this bastard of a dig was salted unless you tell them it was. And then maybe they won't believe you.
Hmm.
And he's like, I don't have a shred of evidence.
Yeah.
And he just leaves them. He goes, you wanted all that worse than you want your woman. Hmm. What will you give up for it?
Yeah.
Or what else will you give up for it?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I like to think he would have stopped and gone and tried to find that girl.
Hmm.
Me too. What do you think he did, though?
I hope that's what he did. He's not. There's no way in my head he was going to try to say that this site is okay.
Yeah.
I think that that was not a possibility in my head anyway. I think he was mm-hmm. going to not do that.
Yeah.
I, if it was me, I probably would have just burned all the papers, everything.
Yeah.
I would have been done. Yep.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then I would have tried to find her.
Yeah, definitely would have. Hopefully that's what happened.
Let's say it is, because we are allowed to decide. That is what
happened, no doubt.
That is. Isaacs was not a bad guy. So together, he and Susie can make their way in the world.
Yeah.
I did love, there are so many things that are just dropped in, and we've talked about this already a lot, but, you know, as I was going through my markers in this book, I was like, oh my gosh, Leap Horn and his uncle chanting, and when they're deer hunting.
Mm.
About keeping the way of beauty so that when he kills the deer, it's all part of the same pattern that's being woven.
Right. And that came up too when he came across a dead deer and he could see that it was being dressed properly. But George is the one who killed the deer, but he saw, why wouldn't he have finished this? Why would he leave it that way? And then he could see that nothing had been taken, but it was he was on the way to doing all that and had to leave.
Right.
You know, so that came up too, because he was respecting the animal, he was doing the right thing, but he had to leave. And I thought that was something too.
Well, he was taking like the gallbladder and a couple of other things and making them into something that he buried, kind of like in atonement.
Yeah, yeah.
So that also was part of it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he didn't take anything, any of the deer to eat or anything. And that goes along with, this is the part I loved. And of course, in this paperback book, who knows, page 76, but it's him talking about his grandfather teaching him about basically the people and the lands and all the religion and everything. And says he taught him the lessons of the changing woman, that the only goal for man was beauty, and that beauty was found only in harmony, and that this harmony of nature was a matter of dazzling complexity. And he talks about, gives concrete examples in nature of how this affects that and that affects this. And it's not even things that you and I might think about. He says the dung beetle's movement affects the flight of the sparrow, and the raven deflects the eagle from the sky, and the eagle's stiff wing bends the will of the wind people. And so he says, every cause has its effect, every action its reaction, a reason for everything. In all things a pattern, and in this pattern, the beauty of harmony. Thus one learned to live with evil by understanding it, by reading its cause. And thus one learned gradually and methodically, if one was lucky, to always go in beauty, to look for the pattern and find it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes Joe Leap Horn such a good detective. He's like, these things all had a reason for happening. Somebody did these things. Why did these people make the decisions and do the things they did?
Yeah. Yep, I love that. I highlighted the same thing.
Yeah, and it was when he was talking about this, and then something that when he was talking to the priest, something he said, I kind of at that point wondered about his religion. And then they got a book from the library, and I think it's called Tony Hillerman's Landscapes, and it's by his daughter Anne and her husband, who's a photographer. And they went through and took pictures of all the different places featured in each of his books. And then in whatever chapter goes with a book, they would highlight something, like they'd go, what's something that's important in this book are these little totems. So here's what it means to do a totem, here's some pictures of things, here's what they would do, and here's why it would matter, and all this kind of thing.
Cool. And
I'm not done with the book, because they wind up inadvertently giving a few spoilers in each one, and I'm like, I'll wait. But she said in that book, a lot of Sundays after Mass, we would go have a surprise, and we'd drive around, and I went, what do you mean after Mass? And I'd look it up, and he's a devout Catholic.
Oh, that's awesome. That is neat.
Yeah.
It's a neat way to discover that, but, you know, you can kind of feel it in what he's writing.
Well, and he's a lifelong Catholic, but he had said he really admired the Navajos because their religion, he thought, was so humane. And I thought that was an interesting intersection of things. So when he has the priest in here and talks about these two bits of the faith from the Zuni and the Navajos. And then, of course, when you know that sometime in his career, the Navajos named him a son of the Navajo Nation.
Ooh.
So that's how right he gets it.
Very good.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear
you
that.
You trust
that's,
it.
That's neat. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I, like I said earlier, I really liked Father Ingalls. And, you know, he was a very interesting priest. And, so it's nice to know that Hillerman wrote that from the heart, mm-hmm. too. That's neat.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It was chapter 13 in which he has that long conversation with Father Ingalls and learns a lot about the Zuni.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and the book's also good at giving, so it gives you that sense of the people because you're learning about the faith, but also the landscape and the distances mm-hmm. and the silence. Mm-hmm. And he describes things really well without overdoing it.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't go overboard. But yeah, it's very good. Yeah. I like the silence, like what you said. Yep. Nothing but the wind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he was like, the Zuni have only one God. This is the priest speaking.
Yeah.
So first of all, if I move up just a touch, he says, you're holy people speaking to Leaphorn the Navajo. Monster slayer, changing woman, born of water and all that, they're more like a cross between the Greek hero idea and the lesser Greek gods. More human than divine, you know. The Kachinas aren't anything like in Navajo or white culture. We don't have a word for this concept, and neither do you. They're not gods. Now the Zuni have one god, Awanawilona, who was the creator. And then they have Shiwani and Shiwanokia, a man and woman team created by God to create the sun and Mother Earth and all living things. But Kachinas are different. Maybe you could call them ancestor spirits. Their attitude toward humans is friendly, fatherly. They bring blessings. They appear as rain clouds. And I remember at one point they talked about saints and how similar a belief it was. That it was very similar to how we look at saints. Mm-hmm. But I can't remember if he was talking about Navajo or the Zuni.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he talks about, and I don't know about the Navajo, but the what gets talked about a lot for the Zuni is the Kachinas and also the people who are living under the surface of the Dance Hall of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Or that lake, and that's the Dance Hall of the Dead down there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And I don't.
Here we go. I found that. I found the passage.
Okay, good.
He says, very similar in a way. As we see it, when a Christian completes the good life, his soul joins the community of saints. When Zuni completes his path, his spirit joins the village of the Kachinas, and he becomes one of them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, interesting.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very, very.
Well, and it's all the things that we've talked about before, which is that you can't, the religions that are, you know, true believers, there are the bits of light, right, that are the reflections of the real truth.
Yeah.
And that's where you see this is what the priest is doing.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, we can understand this because we have this.
Yes.
This is what they have also.
Right, yeah, comparing their origin myth with the Navajo and with our Genesis, that sort of thing. He said George was doing that, you know. But there is an understanding between the two, no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's very good. Very good.
I also liked when Joe Leaphorn is saying something about there's been some witch talk going on. You know,
yeah,
and that comes up in other books more, but you know, and you don't expect that a lot. And he says, somebody told me this is the priest. The boy's mother was living with a couple of witches. You think that might be important? No, Leaphorn said. I just make a point not to overlook witch talk like that. We don't have much trouble on the reservation, but that's where a lot of it starts. And he says, you believe in witches? That's like me asking you if you believe in sin, Father, Leaphorn said. The point is, man. You gradually learn that witch talk and trouble sort of go together.
Yeah.
I'm I've noticed that myself, Ingalls said. I was like, that's like asking if you believe in sin.
Yes,
of course,
yes.
I believe in it.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I took, you know, all those points are great too. And the one of the things of the many that I took from this was, you know, that salting of the sight and how visceral my reaction to of that was, you know. But it does show a little bit about, you know, science and how science is corrupted, because it can be, you know, science is as good as the people that are doing it. It's, you know, people have motivations in science like this fella did of proving themselves or not letting go of a thing that's obviously disproved due to what they're seeing, you know, and things like that. You know, human beings are doing the science, you know, so they're human. They have the same frailties as the rest of us, right? You know, just like in religion or outside religion or anything, you know. So, you know, in today's time, you know, there are people that worship science. Science is the religion, you know, and they look to the science, they always say. And it's only as good as the people, you know. It still is.
Yeah.
And there's still all kinds of reasons for someone to falsify something. So, yeah, it just needs to be, you know, with science well done doesn't have that problem. But it needs to be done correctly, right?
Because the truth is the truth. And if you're the right kind of believer, I mean, the Catholic Church has been studying truth for 2,000 years. So many chances are that if something comes up, you can look back and go, oh, here's something similar. Here's something that was talked about just like this beforehand.
Yeah.
And it gives you all these ways to try to look at it and understand it. And then science also, not for 2,000 years, but science also. But yeah, in any case, religion or science, if you have somebody who says, this isn't actually a mystery. I have my idea. My idea is right. And I don't care what anyone says. Mm-hmm. And that's this guy Reynolds. It's like, I know what happened to Folsom Man. This is a really cool idea. Mm-hmm. You should all believe it. Hmm. Well, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. Could be true. Let's see.
But prove it.
Prove it right. And prove it real. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it made me think of that. I know it's kind of outside the scope of the book, but it's one of the things that, you know, really annoyed me. Reynolds annoyed me in more than one way. Not only is he killing people, but also he's not doing the right stuff.
Oh, yeah. He was just obnoxious.
Right, right.
You know.
Yeah.
He was trying to be all jolly and everything, but he wasn't that jolly.
He was not. He was fake jolly. No.
Yes. I didn't care for it. I felt sorry for Isaacs.
Yeah.
One other thing I liked, and this doesn't really have anything to do with anything except how complicated life can be between people and between legality sometimes. Mm. So Joe Leaphorn early on is thinking about a job that he was happy to be interrupted in to go look for these kids or check on this kid. And it says an old singer complained he'd given a neighbor woman $800 to take it to Gallup and make a down payment on a pickup truck. And the woman had spent his money. And he's like, and so that actually happened. So it should have been simple. But the woman said, but the singer owed her money, and the singer was a witch, a Navajo wolf. So there's that. Then there's the question on which side of the boundary fence they'd been standing when the money changed hands. Because if they were standing where she said, they were on the Navajo land, and that was under tribal federal jurisdiction. But if they stood where the singer claimed, they were on non-reservation allocation land, and it would probably be tried under New Mexico embezzlement law. And I was like, this is so complicated.
Yeah.
I never would have thought of any of this stuff.
Oh, my gosh. That's true.
Yeah. Who's got jurisdiction? And also, the charges that are being leveled against each other, some can be proven, some can't, but they all have to be taken seriously.
Mm. Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a mess, isn't it?
But I liked that, you know, realism.
Yeah, me too. I love that in these kinds of books. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much. Very much. So this is great. Yep. So thanks for bringing this to me.
Oh, well, I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, I did very much. So you're about four books in, you say?
Yeah. I'm just finishing up People of the Dark.
Okay.
Which is the first Jim Chi book.
Very good.
And it's equally good. And I know I kind of mentioned this, but I'd like to mention again, each of these books I've read so far has had really dramatic moments of tension and danger and kind of almost thriller-like in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in this book, Susie and Joe Leaphorn are in danger of being killed by Reynolds, now we know.
Mm-hmm.
But because he's been, there was a dart that's used on animals usually to paralyze them, but the guy used it on Joe Leaphorn.
Mm.
So there's that whole element. And can she protect them and all this? And it's being interpreted for us through his drug haze that's going on while he's paralyzed. So that was really tense. And then in the other two books I've read, there have been equally kind of elaborate but tense situations where action and spying around and getting out of impossible situations has come up.
Mm.
And you're just like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? I mean, I just can't put these books down. And especially since I'm listening, I can't skim ahead and cheat.
Hmm.
By just going, what happens? I know he gets out of it, but what happens?
Mm-hmm.
I have to go every step of the way. And it's just that it makes them really good.
Yeah, cool. Yep, I agree with you.
Hmm.
Yeah, very much. So, that's cool. So I was just looking up, Dark Winds again, and I found Ann Hillerman has a little Facebook page, which says, for those Dark Winds fans who like to read the Hillerman books which inspired the series, season 3 draws on Dance Hall of the Dead and Sinister Pig. And then it says, but as Tony Hillerman often said, movies are not books, so expect many creative changes. That's fun.
Yeah. Well, that's right, because it's a different storytelling medium.
Yeah, it's a different deal. Yeah, that's good.
And it's a different time, so I don't know if there are different ways they want to represent things than they would have been represented before.
Yeah.
You know, not having watched it, I don't know. So.
Yeah, very good point. Yep.
Yeah.
You bet. So. That's right. Very good. Yeah. Well, thank you again. I really enjoyed it, so that's great.
I'm so glad you liked it.
You bet.
And I'm thrilled, of course, because this set me on the path of listening to a bunch of the other ones. So.
Good deal. Listening to some George Guidall. Yeah.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes.
All right. Well, next up for us is Hombre.
Oh,
1967.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Kind
your
of.
Your Western choice.
Almost goes with that, yeah. On BookTube, they have June on the Range. You know, so there's a bunch of BookTube people that read Westerns.
Oh.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. Kind of a fun deal they do.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, Hombre, it sounded like a good movie for June. So.
Yes, and I had never seen it before. Mm-hmm. Have you seen? You'd watched it, I guess, since you picked it.
You bet. Yep.
Yeah, so I was surprised. Paul Newman.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Paul Newman.
Playing.
There he is.
It's kind of an Apache kind of a role.
Kind of an hombre.
So, you're kind of an hombre. He's the man.
There we go. I love it.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. That it should go perfectly with this book.
Oh,
or we'll
good.
Find out if it does or not.
Yeah, for sure.
So
I love it. Okay. Well, wonderful. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everyone.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
All right. You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye.